505. 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Wednesday.
Good news is, for me, I'm here. The bad news for you is, I'm coming back.
That's perfect. Thank you, Joe Strecker, executive producer. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to be here. Hope you're having a wonderful Wednesday so far. Give it some time, if not. And hey, if it doesn't turn out, then there's always tomorrow, right? Tomorrow is another day. And today is, well, a little light on the show, but you know what? Judge Napolitano is entitled to take a vacation, misinformed. So we will not be hearing from Judge Anna Napolitano. We'll be hearing from Breitbart, senior editor-in-chief at 8:30 in lieu of the honorable judge, regarding pushback on critical race theory, which is going on, and you should be happy about that. A lot, one of the things I keep pointing out, I'm looking for positives in the sea of misery brought about by COVID-19, including I saw that the life expectancy in the United States is now down a year and a half. It's the biggest one-year decline, I think, since World War II. I read an article about that this morning. So lots of gloom and doom, but, you know, there is some positive that comes out of this. Critical race theory, of course, in people's faces now. A lot of parents actually paying attention to what their children are learning in school. Thanks to COVID, we had Zoom school. Yay! Thanks to COVID, we actually had parents that were, well, forced to help their children or even forced to force their children to do their homework. What in the hell are they reading? Look at this. Yeah, it's enlightened quite a few folks. Quite a few. And I was listening to Laura Ingraham's program on the way in to work this morning, and she was interviewing quite a few people who were activists in this sort of rebellion going on out there in the world, which is a beautiful rebellion to see people taking an interest in their school board, finally looking into who these school board members are and their position relative to critical race theory and a bunch of other leftist agenda items, and they are not going to abide. They're fighting. They're looking to recall board members. They're running for board member spots. I mean, this is maybe a great enlightenment. I'm looking for positives in this sea of, sadness, if you want to put it that way. So we'll be hearing from the senior editor-in-chief over at Breitbart at 8:30 on critical race theory pushback, preceded by, yes, Congressman Massey's going to be here anyway. I'm looking forward to having him on the program. I love talking to the congressman. We'll be talking inflation, which may very well be around for years, according to some economists, waking up to the idea that the strong economic rebound and lingering pandemic disruptions, will be fueling inflation for quite some time. So how long it's going to take to recover from the COVID, this is, again, another COVID downside, supply chain interruptions and people refusing to go back to work or not wanting to go back to work. In the case of food service industry, we've talked about it before, and there's lots of statistics and articles and reporting on it. People not interested in returning to the food service industry, causing a real problem at restaurants. And parenthetically, and you know, here's a plug for Listener Lunch in that context. 1 week from today, Chandler's. Yes. Love Chandler's on the West Side. They love us, and everybody loves Renee, so we'll get to see Renee. Got to bring her up. But please, cut your wait staff some slack. If your food doesn't arrive right on time, chances are that is not some, you know, sort of pre-COVID problem going on. Excuse me, incompetence. It's just simply lack of help. They're hiring. If you're looking for a job, food service industry is right there waiting for you. But cut them some slack, and that certainly is the rule of the day, at least insofar as Listener Lunch is concerned, because, you know, being inundated on a random Wednesday with a whole bunch of folks that you're not necessarily prepared for, although I know Chandler's is, can be a bit of a chore. So we love the folks that let us show up, and God bless them for it. So please just cut them some slack. Anyway, back to Congressman Massey topics, inflation. People that were arrested on January 6th not getting a speedy trial. I've mentioned this before as well. You do have the right to a speedy trial. You don't have to waive it. Quite often, defense lawyers will waive the right to a speedy trial, which is incorporated into the state and federal constitutions. You must be tried within a certain period of time. And quite often, the defense attorneys will say, no, we'll just waive our right to a speedy trial. And that provides the defense attorney with some opportunity to prepare a defense. Prosecutor's office has to turn over, by law, by the rules of criminal procedure, all the evidence they have against the defendant, the evidence they intend to use in court, and any exculpatory evidence. They have an obligation under the law to turn it over. And there have been just myriad cases in criminal law about prosecutors that, well, gee, I forgot to turn that part over, or bringing up evidence that wasn't ever previously provided to defense counsel right in the middle of the trial. It's like, whoa, whoa, objection, where did this come through? So there's a lot of exchange of information going on, and defense lawyers being defense lawyers, especially really good ones, have a lot of cases that they're responsible for. So quite often, the speedy trial right is waived. But it doesn't have to be. That means the prosecutor's office has to step up to the plate and prepare a case beyond a reasonable doubt that they can support in front of a jury. Why waive the right to a speedy trial under these circumstances? It's a legitimate question. They went around arresting people, but, you know, we saw you at the riot on January 6th. There you are. We have a photograph of you. We're going to charge you. Okay, go ahead. Now, prove that I did something criminal other than what were literally on the presence. And there is where they probably get the defense attorneys. Well, we've got a picture of your client right here on the premises. That in and of itself constitutes a trespass. Now, most cases, you know, trespassing. Hey, Joe, how many trespassing cases do you think that that came about as a consequence of, oh, I don't know, maybe the Portland riots? How many trespassing cases do you think they could bring? Like hundreds and hundreds of them. And then there's the looting, the burning, the, you know, the physical violence, the bombs that were made, the attacks on police, you know, the graver crimes, the more problematic crimes. They're getting dismissed by the hundreds. So, speedy trial? Go ahead. Prosecute me on a trespassing charge. It's a wise use of taxpayer dollars. And finally, censorship. White House, Facebook, censorship. It's all a big problem. Congressman Massey should have some interesting comments about that. I anticipate he will. Especially given the White House's most recent pronouncement that they actually have been working with social media companies since the transition team came into play. The Joe Biden transition team. That will be the team put together after Joe Biden won the election. And I know people are choking on those words. Some people are anyway. But when he won the election in November, I know there's some confusion and some problems, granted. But the transition team kicks in right after the election, right after some, you know, perception that we have a winner, and starts taking over before the president is sworn in. And that's where Jen Psaki and others have acknowledged that they started working with social media companies about COVID and about what else. But we know certainly they were working with them insofar as, well, deleting information and asking social media to stop the spread of information relating to COVID. I am more curious at this point what else they were asking social media companies to do insofar as suppressing information and evidence that you and I exchange amongst ourselves on the social media platform. What do you think they talked about other than COVID? Wow, that really gets the wheels spinning in your head, doesn't it? If we're only a fly on the wall in the room for those discussions. Well, someday maybe we might find out. A little freedom of information request, perhaps? I doubt that's going to get us anywhere. 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Apologize if I sound a little congested this morning. I am. Anybody else suffer with allergy problems this time of year? I don't know. I've been having some real struggles of late. So to the extent that I do sound a little congested, my apologies to you, but not sick. It's just allergies or whatever. Some interesting observations about inflation. There was this great article I found, of all places, on Zero Hedge. It's an illustration of inflation, and it's a rather fun one. involving Campbell's soup, which is a perfect gauge of inflation. You might ask why, but the salient point to start off with is that they have retained the exact same packaging and quantity since the product was introduced in the 1800s. That same condensed soup can weighs the same. It's the same size, contains the same quantity of Campbell's condensed soup as it has since the beginning. So it represents an interesting illustration of inflation, and I might dive into that one. Get your phone calls are welcome if you got another topic you want to talk about. Also, President Joe Biden showing up today. Right. That president. The second president of the United States of America who's Catholic. And he was a real pro-abortion guy. Do you ever wonder what maybe Cincinnati's local archbishop might have to say about that? Last time I checked, and I did read a couple of articles this morning, Mount St. Joe still purports to be a Catholic university. So they're inviting the pro-abortion Joe Biden to a Catholic university? Catholic Joe Biden? Yeah, quite a few interesting observations about that one as well. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that, especially my Catholic friends. What is your perception of that? 749-5500-800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. It is time for me to... #521 right now. About KRCD Talk Station. Very happy Wednesday to you. Hump day, middle of the week. It's a great illustration that, you know, anybody, economists, people who are observant, understand, you know, it's when you're talking particularly to Democrats and talking about we need to raise the corporate taxes. Those evil corporations don't pay enough. Well, you know, whatever they pay, we pay. I mean, it's just such a simple economic reality. They're looking for a certain margin, you know, profit margin, and they're going to maintain that profit margin in order to keep their business in. And let's, you know, just grab a profit margin out of thin air. Let's say you're looking to make 10%. Not a lot. I mean, grocery store profit margins are usually the lowest. They're usually in like the single digits. There's not a lot of leeway for grocery stores. They have a tremendous amount of overhead and a tremendous amount of waste and a lot of employment. A lot of people behind the scenes. It just costs a lot of money to run a grocery store, right? But you grab a random percentage, you know, profit percentage, and let's just say it's 10%. We need 10 in order to keep the business profitable, pay everybody's salaries, put a smile on our face, and we've got to have at least 10%. And someone comes along, God, you know, an act of God, like a snowstorm or something that knocks out our version of what should be, you know, reliable power source, like in Texas. Joe was just talking about a foam shortage, you know, packing foam and mattresses. If you rely on anything that's got foam connected with it, whether it's part of the product itself or whether it needs to be wrapped in foam to be shipped to you, you're in for a wait. Supply chain disruption. If the cost of foam to pack or create the product goes up, you know you are going to pay for that increase. Because if they don't pass that along to you, that 10% profit margin may go down to 9 or something less, which in the hearts and minds of the owners of the business, the CEOs, the board members, that's not enough profit. We need to pass along to the consumers. That works the same way with taxes as well. You start heaping on a higher percentage tax on a business, they're not just going to eat it. They're going to seek to maintain their same level of profit margin or, in fact, increase the profit margin. You are going to pay that tax. And I mentioned this Campbell's soup thing in terms of inflation. We will be talking to Congressman Massey later in the program about inflation. Campbell's condensed soup, and again, I got this off of Zero Hedge via political calculations blog. Campbell's condensed soup has been used as a great illustration of inflation because the product is defined by its packaging. It hasn't changed. This number one size steel can contains the same amount of condensed soup that it has when the product was first introduced to you, the American public, in the late 1800s. That, unlike, I just immediately thought of candy bars. When I was a kid, a candy bar was a lot bigger than it is now. They shrunk in size, but the price stayed the same. You've seen this in coffee. It used to be a pound of coffee. And somewhere along the lines, I think it was the 70s, we changed that. It's now 12 ounces or 15 ounces or something. But you still paid the same amount. Perception versus reality. Well, the can of Campbell's soup, you can't do that. It's the same size can. It's got the same product in it. So you need to eat and absorb the cost of Campbell's increased cost, including inflation. And Campbell's soup has, in fact, confirmed that it is increasing prices across its product lines because of this. So Campbell's planning to raise its prices. Campbell's announced last quarter earnings were weaker than the company expected. See, that expectation of profit margin, right? Compared to the same period last year, profits had fallen 5% to $160 million, which is shockingly low. I figured Campbell's would be a much larger concern, but that's their profits. I suppose that's net. According to the CEO, our results were impacted by the rising inflationary environment, short-term increases in supply chain costs, and some executional pressures. Whatever executional pressures are, I don't know, but you're eating them. You. And why this doesn't register and why more people aren't vocal in response to the screams and cries of we need heavier taxation on those companies. And I notice I'm not talking about individuals. Now, individuals will, of course, adjust their purchasing based upon how much money you take from them, steal, and my version of reality. But when it comes to companies, those are the people providing the goods and services that we rely on or that we want. We don't necessarily sometimes need, but that we rely on. The groceries we buy, the Campbell's soup that we purchase, is a perfect thing, an illustration as to why everyone should react with, maybe not horror, but just, you know, like righteous indignation, as if you look at the person suggesting corporate taxes should be higher. Like, dude, are you out of your blanket mind? You and I are going to eat that. It is going to be reflected in the prices of the goods and services that we buy. You're harping on evil corporations. Well, you know, if they're so evil, quit buying their stuff. But if you want to raise taxes on them, you're raising taxes on yourself. And more importantly, because you know what? These Democrats who demand higher taxes on all these businesses, they're the class warriors. They're the alleged, you know, champions of the downtrodden. Who's getting FCC non-compliant word just ran through my head, but I won't use it. I'll just opt for screwed. Who's getting screwed more in this grand inflationary equation? When the prices go up, who's being harmed the most? Right. The poor. 527 right now. 55 KRC, the talk station. Local stories coming up. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. And I mentioned Goodwill. Goodwill, helping our entire community by providing job training and placement for folks that probably wouldn't get job training and placement were it not for Goodwill. Homeless veterans immediately come to mind. Folks, I've seen. Station. Yeah, it's 5:32, Wednesday, and a happy one. Joe Biden coming to Cincinnati Day. Yay! What does the Archbishop have to say about that? What does Cincinnati's Archbishop have to say about Joe Catholic Biden, practicing Catholic Biden, pro-abortion Joe Biden? He wasn't consulted. Nobody asked me. If anybody asked me, I'd have said, don't let him show up. I don't have anything to say about Mount St. Joe. They operate independently from the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. Am I going to get in trouble for drawing Pontius Pilate-like parallels of washing hands of the whole thing, Joe? I think I just did. Well, it's their decision, not mine. Here, let me just, I'm done. I'm out of this. I have nothing to say other than it was not my choice in the matter. Well, that's the sum and substance of the reporting on that one, pretty much. Archdiocese of Cincinnati issues a statement yesterday saying Archbishop Dennis Schnur would not have granted a visit by President Joe Biden to a Catholic property. Statement came in the heels of confirmation that CNN is, in fact, hosting the town hall tonight. Don Lemon asking hard-hitting questions, I'm sure, tonight. It's Mount St. Joe University, 8 p.m., the start time. Many people critical that purported Catholic Joe Biden, who embraces and purports, or rather, and supports with your tax dollars the idea of abortion, that does fly in the face of Catholic doctrine and dogma. How he could end up at a Catholic university who invited him to participate in this event at their place remains a mystery to many Catholics. In a statement, quote, this is from the Archbishop's office, Archbishop Schnur has therefore not been asked for, nor would he have granted his approval for any such event to occur on Catholic premises. Mount St. Joseph University operates independent from the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, close quote. Does that mean the Archbishop has no authority, no persuasive authority? He can't even, I don't know. It's not my hierarchy. I'm just not, well, they didn't ask me either. Oh, look, Tom's on the phone. Tom, I'm out of time. I've been babbling about this. Filling up the local news with my just my question mark or my jaundice eye of suspicion about the statement from the Archbishop's office. But anyway, we'll get your call right after we come out of the gate, and along with the stack of stupid or other people's calls as well. 749-5500-800. KRC CD Talk Station, and a very happy Wednesday. If you're going to go to the phones, Tom's on hold. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Joe just mentioned to me about the travel route. You know, obviously, Chuck doing traffic. Joe asked him about Biden's travel route from the airport to get to Mount St. Joe, where he'll be speaking this evening. And it hasn't been announced yet for security reasons. We don't know. So you won't know it until you're stuck in the traffic jam. I thought it was hilarious. One of the articles, I think it was reported in the Inquirer, that it is not known whether Joe Biden will travel across the Brent Spence Bridge. And that apparently when Kamala Harris was around, she did not do that. You know, if he does travel across the Brent Spence Bridge, he might pull over and do an infrastructure plug like so many other presidents before him have done. You know, obviously hollow, empty promises, but we are dealing with a major infrastructure bill at this point right now. The ferry, I believe, probably be the best option for him, Joe, without question. I mean, if he wants to go to Mount St. Joe, the ferry dumps him off right at the bottom of the hill. And would it be cool for the president to take a ferry? I mean, putting aside politics and like, I mean, when do you think the last time a president has taken a ferry? Air Force the big presidential limo one, it's right there on the Anderson Ferry. I think that'd be a great PR stunt for him. I mean, he couldn't lose on that one. Hey, Tom, thanks for holding. Welcome to the program.
Hey, you say something about the president and the ferry, and then you said something earlier about Don Lemon being.
Yeah.
The same thing, are you? No.
I'm not following, Tom. Go ahead.
That one went dead. Okay. Well,
I'm not biting. Go ahead, Tom.
I heard probably a good call. I heard that Biden was supposed to be going to some union training center.
Yes, that is correct.
When are unions gonna wake up and realize that the D doesn't stand for anything helpful? It just stands for being dumb.
Well,
you're gonna support a Democrat, you're stupid, because economically their policies do nothing to help the union. They do nothing to help the union members. All they do is force you to do things a certain way and take money out of your pocket and all that, and it's a bunch of ridiculous garbage. So I don't get it. I don't understand. And more union people that I'm talking to are realizing this.
Oh, without question.
The worse it gets, the more they're realizing.
Well, and they're also realizing, I think, along the lines of all the reasons that unions came about, safety, work hours, has all been, you know, adopted by government and put it and enacted into law. I mean, what do you think OSHA is? You know, OSHA came about as a consequence of a lot of union efforts and, you know, God bless them for it, seeking some safety measures for, you know, unsafe work conditions. You're going to get the safe work conditions because it is illegal to operate a business that is not safe under, or at least pursuant to the regulations out there. So there's
it's kind of the same thing as racism. We had to do a lot to deal with it. And yes, things had to change.
Yep.
But now they've changed. They can't let go of it. Because then that's their moneymaker. They can't let go of all this Democrat union stuff, or we have to still fight the man. Yeah, I thought I saw a band, you know, with a really good photo op with Jeff Bezos. Isn't rich white man the most evil thing in the world or something like that? It's ridiculous.
Yep.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care, Tom. Tom uses the 55 KRC Morning Show as like a little bit of therapy every morning. Gets the vent, gets it out of his system, makes it feel better, makes a point or two. It's like my dad at the Monday morning spleen vent. That's how that whole thing came about, you know? Screaming at my mom about matters political. He needs to have a bigger audience right there. You are welcome to call as well. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phone. Joe Strecker is offering his services for your podcast, Tom. USA Insulation. Premium foam. It's 5:50 right now at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Hump Day. Sadly, for those appointment listeners, no Judge Ed Napolitano today. He's on vacation. Just found that out late in the day yesterday. So he's entitled. We will make up for it because we'll be talking with Breitbart, senior editor-in-chief, at 8:30 on the pushback on critical racial theory. And without further ado, let's jump over to the stack of stupid. California couple and gender reveal parties. How many gender reveal parties have we had in the stack of stupid over the last couple of years, Joe? Something always seems to go wrong. We didn't have gender reveal parties when we were kids. Anyway. Gender reveal pyrotechnic show, i.e. fireworks, is responsible for a massive inferno that has killed a fireman. They've now been hit with involuntary manslaughter charges. Refugio Manuel Jimenez Jr. and Angela Renee Jimenez pleaded not guilty to felony charges and 29 other counts related to the September 2020 El Dorado fire. Remember talking about that. That fire allegedly set by the couple's smoke-generating pyrotechnic device that ignited dry grass at the foot of the San Bernardino Mountains east of Los Angeles. They allegedly tried in vain, obviously, to put out the fire with bottled water, quickly stoked by strong winds and, of course, the dry conditions that exist out there. The El Dorado fire took more than 2 months to contain, and it killed Charles Morton, who was 39 years old, described as the leader of an elite firefighting Big Bear Interagency Hotshot Squad, also injured 13 others. The fire destroyed 5 homes, 15 buildings, led to hundreds of evacuations, and ultimately affected 36 square miles. How'd that gender reveal party go for you, huh? Huh?
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
There you have it. All right. Oh, this is a class act right here. 59-year-old Brooklyn guy facing robbery charges after he allegedly took an electric scooter from a 7-year-old. Daniel Ufar has walked up to this 7-year-old little boy, 36th Street and 12th Avenue. They said he blocked the boy's path, grabbed his scooter, and took off. Thankfully, the boy was not injured. Police released a video of a person of interest in the case. They say they arrested Ufar on Monday. He's charged with robbery and criminal possession of stolen property. It was unclear if he had a lawyer. No details other than that were immediately available, but let us keep our fingers crossed that while he's doing whatever small stint in prison, that he is treated the same as they treat child molesters.
Here he is, the biggest douche of the universe. In all the galaxies, there's no bigger
7 years old.
You've reached the top, the pinnacle of douchedom. Good going, douche. Your dreams have come true.
Joe's seen the video. He said the guy just literally just walks up to him, just takes it, walks away. Yeah, thankfully the kid wasn't injured. Anyway, well-deserved award there. We go to France for this one, where French police shot dead. Words you don't hear together very often, do you? French police shot dead. Anyway, a 32-year-old man who was suspected of decapitating and partially eating a 13-year-old boy. Kid's head was found in a bucket, according to prosecutors. Authorities made the grisly discovery at an apartment in southern France rented by a man who was had psychiatric disorders, clearly. Public prosecutor Laurent Gambeau speaking with the local news. Investigation into the disappearance of the boy from a foster home in Marseille, which was about 60 miles away from where they were found, led police to the address. The body found may be that of a minor, according to the press release or the police statement, adding that strips of flesh had been ripped from a shoulder, sparking suspicions of cannibalism. However, it was, in the statement, quote, impossible at the current time to confirm the hypothesis of anthropophagy, which apparently is the word for cannibalism in the medical profession. The boy, identified local media as a Romanian, had reportedly been on his way from a foster home over to visit his mom, lived on the same street as the killer. When she arrived at the scene, the mother was heard screaming, "He killed my son, he killed my baby." Romain, who did not know his father, had spent most of his life in and out of foster homes. He was with his best friend that night. Man, who previously had previous convictions for acts of violence, fled from his apartment by jumping over rooftops. But he was found 3 hours later, and that's when they shot him dead. Suspect did not appear to have been armed at the time of his death, and he had been formally identified as the killer. Do you think there's going to be riots and protests all across France for the killing of this cannibal child murderer because he was shot even though he was not armed?
No.
Thanks, Dad. 556, 55 KRC, the talk station, 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Whole lot to go. And I'm anxious. I'm curious to know. What do you think? Catholic Joe Biden showing up at a Catholic university? Catholic pro-abortion Joe Biden showed up at a Catholic university? And Archbishop Schnur is like, it's not my call. Anyhow, I'll be right back after the news.
You are what I need to hear.
I love it, listening to it every day.
Thanks for listening.
You're knocking it out of the park, dude. That's all they're doing.
55 KRC.
It's 6:05, and a happy Wednesday to you. Brian Thomas right here, glad to be. The phone number, if you'd like to call, comment on something going on in the world or here locally, which would also be in the world. 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Larry is on the phone about a topic of conversation. I'm just curious to know what you think. A lot of people are expressing some criticism, Catholics specifically. I mean, I express criticism on behalf of the Catholics. If I was a Catholic, how I would react? Like, where is the outrage? You know, how is it that you can allow someone who is so outspoken and pro-abortion, which is fundamentally in opposition to the doctrinal dogmatic principles of the Catholic Church. I had a great conversation with Judge Anna Napolitano about this. And for those regular listeners and you're just tuning in, you tune in at 8:30 for the judge. He's not here today. He's on vacation. But, you know, the anti-abortion position of the Catholic Church preceded. It has been around a lot longer than the Democrat Party's embracing of abortion and defense of abortion under the auspices of women's rights. It's been a tenet of the Catholic Church for a long, long time, before it was a political issue. And Joe Biden is in favor of it. He's in favor of your dollars, whatever your political or religious persuasion, your tax dollars out of your pocket going to fund the termination of pregnancies. He is in favor of legislation that would do just that. He never says anything against abortion at all. He's, again, yeah, that's women's rights, women's rights, women's rights. Fine, that's his position. He's entitled to it. You don't have to agree with it. But he also goes around and claims to be a Catholic. This is the Nancy Pelosi. And that strikes me as really a genuine thing for the Catholic Church to get involved with. Whoa! This is like a Hollywood celebrity that, you know, and I'm always critical of them getting a lot of media attention. Who cares what Michael Moore says about anything? But there he is, celebrity. Oh, my God. Tom Cruise made an utterance. We need to report on it. Folks like that get a lot of media attention. You know, the media influencers out there. You know, there's some that don't even exist in the movies, and yet, you know, they got millions of followers on Twitter or Facebook, social media influencers. They get prominence and traction. And when one person without, there is no peer to prominence than the United States of America's president, the person who's going to always get airtime, the person who's always going to get reported on, positive, negative, anything in between. He gets up in the morning and says something that's going to get reported on. It's going to be documented. It'll be in the congressional record or whatever. You get the biggest spotlight on the planet focused on the president of the United States of America, just as a general principle. And he's out campaigning to be elected, and part of his campaign platform and his speeches to the masses, you know, I'm a proud Catholic. So if he goes to church, he's on television. Look, Joe Biden's showing up at church. The church that fundamentally opposes abortion. And he's invited to a Catholic institution, Mount St. Joseph, to speak. He is, in essence, being embraced. And I'm not saying all the nuns over at Mount St. Joe University are embracing Joe Biden, but from everything I know, a lot of leftists among the nunnery, and they run the place. But you would think that this is an opportunity. The Catholic Church is like, oh my God, we got a great opportunity to make a great point about our value systems and our belief systems. The spotlight is right there. It's time to make a stand and stand up and defend what we fundamentally believe in as an organization. The silence is deafening. And then Archbishop Schnurz asked about it. He's Cincinnati's archdiocese, you know, the grand poobah, right? Archbishop Schnurz has not been asked for, nor would he have granted his approval for any such event to occur on Catholic premises. So after Joe's invited and after the pressure comes on from local Catholics, like, what in the heck is going on here? This isn't right. I wasn't asked. And he says he has no control over the operations. They are independent from the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. They're a Catholic institution. Are you telling me the Archbishop has no sway whatsoever over a Catholic institution? That pressure couldn't be brought? And that this was all a mystery and unknown to the Catholic hierarchy? And I find that a bit hard to swallow. No, I'm not accusing him of lying. I'm just saying I find it hard to swallow. Maybe there's a problem with the communication going on within the bureaucracy. I don't know. But the blanket president of the United States is coming to your Catholic college. You'd think word might get around, you know? Hey, Larry, thanks so much for holding. Happy Wednesday to you. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Brian. Sorry, I just got done with my run, so if I'm huffing and puffing, I'm trying to get in shape for the pig. They moved it to
good for you.
Weekend, so, yeah.
Larry, I got a lot of respect for anybody who can even think that they could participate in the flying pig. My regular joke is I'd start off and they'd find me, you know, grabbing my heart in a ditch about 500 yards down the road. So good for you. Good for you taking stock in your health.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, actually, the last thing that you said, I was going to call it first of all because, you know, the whole idea of what you're talking about today, there's a lot of points I'd like to make. But the first thing was, you know, I'm just thinking about, like, me and what I'm doing, you know, and how it's going to affect my day. And I'm thinking, I'm trying to be on the road, you know, in the evening, taking my daughter to swim lessons or doing that thing or whatever. Now I have to think about traffic. And, of course, we can't know where the president's going. And then, you know, I started to think about the articles, trying to read articles about figuring that out, traffic and where the president's going to be and all that. And I thought it was interesting in the article, and it connects to what you're saying today, that the only people who are going to be at this event are going to be there by invitation.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of different reasons you could say, you know, COVID, whatever. Maybe it's because it's a smaller space. Which then makes you have to ask some questions about why Mount St. Joe, right? How many people outside of the tri-state area really know much about Mount St. Joe other than maybe alum? You know, it's not a Xavier, it's not a University of Cincinnati.
Good point.
It's not some other large entity in Cincinnati. So then, you know, you have to ask yourself, if the Archbishop says he didn't know about it, you know, who at Mount St. Joe invited the president.
Right.
That's something people should be asking themselves. So
well, Larry, hold on.
Only both ways.
But your point on the invitations is another really good one. Mm-hmm. I mean, Larry, if you got an invitation, you got to have a busy day ahead of you. You've already said, I got all these things going on. I got my kids here, blah, 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 blah. You get an invitation, what, is it going to be last minute? No, they're going to give you an invitation in advance so you can plan your evening accordingly and be free to show up at the 8 p.m. event at Mount St. Joe. So clearly, other people as well knew about it, the ones that were invited. I don't know when the invitations were sent out, but they were sent out in advance of today's event, right?
Right, right. And that brings up some other interesting points, and I'll go quick here. But, you know, so you have invitation only to a presidential event, which would be a big thing the public might be interested in. But, of course, it's just the way that this administration and generally the way progressives have been doing things, is they're setting the stage so that, of course, it's only going to be positive, you know, interaction with the crowd. Of course, you know, who, honestly, I'm just wondering who invited CNN and Joe Biden to Cincinnati anywhere in the first place. But, you know, they've got their invites, so it'll be a positive reception for them, like it is everywhere they go.
Of course.
You know, small positive reception. And that's just the way that they do things. And then the last point I'll make, and then I'll get off of here. But I just got done listening to a book by David Horowitz called Radicals, and he talks a lot about Saul Alinsky. And it's just kind of going through my mind. I'm younger-ish, so, you know, I didn't live through the late 60s and all that. This is all historical research for me, but you know, basically just the community organization and the things, rules for radicals is all in
this
book and things like that. And, you know, a lot of what I'm seeing now that I'm learning more about, you know, progressives historically, I'm seeing this stuff rolled out in an interface way. You know, here, basically, Alinsky's ideas would be like, you don't tell them exactly what you're doing, you just do it. And that's exactly what I feel like this is, and that's exactly what I feel like the progressive agenda has been, you know, for the last few decades. And here it is again, like, hey, we're coming to Cincinnati. You don't, you know, we're not going to tell your archbishop we're going to a Catholic institution. And again, it's all just, you know, in your face, happening, and nobody knows anything about it. So it just seems like a setup.
You are on the right path, Larry. I'm glad you're studying, you know, in your mind what is ancient history and the rules for radicals, and they are absolutely applying that. What Clower and Pliven strategy as well is at play here. There's a whole lot of very obvious, if you're aware of how Marxist and leftist works, all of this division that we see. Now, Mark Levin was on yesterday talking about this book he wrote on the same topic. Also, some suggestions on how to fight back, but. Yes, that this smells a lot. There's a whole lot of what are you? Wait a second. A lot of people can look at this event as innocuous and innocent as it may appear on its face. It's a town hall with President Biden and Don Lemon. Yeah, you raise some interesting questions. How did it end up at Mount St. Joe? How is it the Archbishop of a Catholic church didn't know about it? On and on and on and on and on. Very interesting questions and a lot of suspicion. And, you know, this kind of feeds into what some people might call conspiracy theories. But as long as it rises to the level of your attention and you're viewing it with an objective lens, as you clearly are, all you can do is be left with a bunch of big question marks floating around on this one. /621 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. 749-5500, 800-823 talk. Kind of asking the outlaw question, what's the story about Catholic Joe Biden coming to a Catholic university without anybody bringing up the pro-abortion stance of Joe Biden and how that could pass muster among the Catholics out there. It's politics. No, it precedes politics. This is the other argument you'll hear. Well, you know, a lot of people will give the Catholic Church a pass and give bishops and archbishops and cardinals and whoever doesn't say anything in opposition to this happening, who doesn't rebuke an individual member of the Catholic Church for being pro-abortion. That's bad for business in the Catholic Church. I mean, we might, oh my God, we might lose parishioners. We might lose money. And then there's the other argument that, oh, perhaps if we do that, then somehow we'll be viewed as a political organization, to which I say, Barbara Streisand. Which goes back to the point, if you ended up in litigation over this because the government tried to take away your nonprofit status, your operation as a church status, which allows you tax exemption, if they tried to take that away from you because you advocate against abortion and you hold your professed members voluntarily, I might point out, no one's making anybody be a Catholic. You do not rebuke or otherwise call out your members who are professing something that is the antithesis of your faith. And your argument in not calling them out is because, oh, well, we'll be viewed as a political entity. No, the tenet of the Catholic Church preceded politics. Chicken egg isn't even a discussion here. Which came first, the adoption by the Democrats of abortion as a policy platform or the Catholic Church's tenets and doctrinal dogmatic views of abortion? The Catholic Church wins in terms of how long that has been part of the church's teachings. Life is sacred, etc. It's a core thing. So no, that is not a fear that is a legitimate one. It is a crutch upon which some rely in defense of their not holding accountable individual members of the church for failing to abide by key and core tenets. Corey, thanks for holding. Welcome to the program and a very happy Wednesday to you. Corey?
Can you hear me now?
There you are.
All right. Accidentally touched the mute button there. Well, the Catholic Church, in my opinion, jumped a shark a long time ago. Look at the Pope. The Pope openly supports communism, Green New Deal type policies. And if look at the attendance of the Catholic Church has been dwindling terribly here of late.
Yeah.
I grew up Catholic, as recently still attended Catholic churches, but it's the Catholic Church is not what it used to be. That's for sure. And the, like you said, they've turned political. Everything that they do now has a political lean to it. And I think that's exactly why Joe Biden's there, and that's why they don't call him out for it.
So one may argue then, might one, Corey, that it's the flip side that may be true, that Catholics, if they stood up for the anti-abortion stance that they are doctrinally and dogmatically wed to, it's a tenet of the church, if they stood up for that, they would be less political than they are now. They're actually operating more like a political entity in embracing Democrat politics and embracing presidents and who are supportive of abortion. It flies in the face of the tenets of the church, and therefore, what more could it be than political? So someone can make this
Absolutely.
Argument to take away their tax-exempt status. So let's move in that direction, shall we?
Hey, one other thing real quick. Your interview with Mark Levin yesterday, I wasn't able to listen to it live. I listened to it on the iHeartRadio app. Great mm-hmm. interview. I think Mark Levin's a genius. If people haven't read his other book, his Liberty Amendments, I highly recommend that.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that back up. I just did a refresh on my blog page. Joe has added the Mark Levin book. Of course he did. But you can get a signed copy of American Marxism if you are so inclined. Just go to 55KRC.com and get that. Levin's a great guy, and of course he's laid out everything that's going on. And again, I'll point out that he does have some helpful hints about how to counter all this crap. So appreciate raising that one to the top as well, Corey. Good to hear from you, my friend. Stay well. We're going to get to Greg's call if he doesn't mind holding. He'll be first out of the gate along with local.
It's
6:30 coming up at 6:31 55 KRCD Talk Station. Happy Wednesday. 749-5500-800-823 Talk pound 550 on your AT&T phone. Looking forward to Congressman Thomas Massey coming up at 8:05, and looking forward to talking to Greg, who was kind enough to stay on hold before we get to local stories, talking about the decision to bring Joe Biden to a Catholic college, Mount St. Joe. How did it end up at Mount St. Joe? How is it the Archbishop had no idea? He wouldn't have allowed it. He had a say. Okay. Obviously, this all stems from and springs, and this is a big topic of conversation going right now. I think it's that Archbishop bishop's conference that's taking place right now, whether or not to deny communion to people who advocate for abortion. I guess you can harbor that feeling inside that it's okay, it's a woman's right to choose, et cetera, but it is part of the Catholic doctrine and dogma. It is a core tenet. It's been around forever. And there's a difference between harboring a feeling about it and then actually out advocating for it. And even worse than that, advocating for taking money out of everyone's pocket who is a taxpayer to fund it. And that is taking money out of Catholics' paychecks as well as Jews, Muslims, and every other religion that's out there. Which should be an affront to Catholics, should it not? It should be affront to the Catholic hierarchy. They should speak out more about it. And now they're having a conversation about whether or not it's appropriate to give communion to people who are advocating for something that runs completely contradictory to what they believe. Greg, thanks for holding. Welcome to the program.
Morning, Brian. Before I touch on what I called told Joe about, also, they're trying to repeal the Hyde Amendment even on top of that.
Right.
but before, John, the gentleman that's going to be going out of town for different jobs.
Yeah.
iHeartRadio is that's how I found you when I came over to the Cleveland area because of my wife. Went over this area because that's where her house is. I sold mine back in Illinois, down in Springfield. Anyway, and I've been listening to you probably close to 10 years.
Oh,
and
thanks,
this
man.
Will spark a recognition. When the iHeartRadio app would go down or the internet service for some reason went down, I couldn't hear you over the phone through the radio,
uh-huh.
I would actually call in and listen. So, and just sit on hold.
Oh, no kidding.
So that's who, like I said, that probably sparked it because I know, remember you mentioned a couple of, why is this guy on hold just sitting there listening?
No, there is one caller who does that almost on a daily basis, Greg. Not quite sure if he calls in to actually get on the program, but he most assured, because, you know, Joe Strecker is, he's a great guy in many respects, but he's the ultimate call screener. We do not allow anti-Semites and racists and people with really, really miserable comments and thoughts to come on the 55 KRC Morning Show. Sorry, that's just the way we roll. We run the show. We set the rules. But there are some people that, you know, he knows from a lot of experience are going to go down a dangerous path or just start babbling incoherently and add nothing to the program. So he knows how to flag them. A lot of some people will just stay on hold the whole time, Greg, and you've provided me with new insight. It's out of town, folks. iHeartMedia app has gone down. They call in. They want to be on hold just so they can listen to the program.
Right. I mean, you're that good enough radio personality to where I will call in and do that. But
God bless
around
you.
Here, if I wanted to hear about the Bachelorette or whatever stupid crap, I stay within your FCC compliance on that one. Anyway, if I wanted to hear that crap, I would listen to some of the stuff around here. But anyway, wherever John goes, I've traveled across this country, and your 55 KRC is the number one slot to listen to on my playlist on iHeart.
I'm blushing and humbled, and thank you so much, Greg. Go ahead.
Okay, now back to the point that I called in for. Before Joe starts giving you the hairy eyeball, which I'm surprised you didn't bring it up, Joe should actually ride the trolley or streetcar, whatever the heck y'all call it, because it's pointless, it's a waste of money, and it's empty 99% of the time on that one.
I think you're right. That would be, actually, that would be hilarious to have Joe Biden on the streetcar.
One last thing. I'd like for you, Tom, or your wife to sneak in to Don Lemmy
town hall. Because he's already flipping gears, he would actually bind up and not be able to do anything and fall over in a puddle of useless glob that he almost is now.
I appreciate the call and the comments, Craig. I really do. God bless you, sir. And you know the funny thing is, because you mentioned it's a town hall, the idea that anybody could even call this a town hall to me suggests that it's a local event that people are welcome to attend, where you might have some interaction and some exchange and some Q&A from those that you elect that are representing lord over your day-to-day decision making. But no, that is not the case. It's by invitation only, and the details about it have been kept under wraps up until, well, today, with the exception of all of the people involved in setting it up. And you know there's a bunch of those, plus those that were, I suppose, if you want to view it this way, lucky enough to get an invitation to show up at the private event that is being billed as a town hall. 637, 55 Care CD Talk Station, your wellness center. To the rescue, guys. Definitely to the rescue. If you're getting older, your body, I'm guessing, as is typically the case, is not producing testosterone the way it used to. And testosterone is what, muscle mass, weight gain, all tied into testosterone. Your libido, it is most definitely. It is 6:42 right now, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Happy Wednesday. Joe Biden coming to town day, raising all kinds of controversies, specifically or most fundamentally given the venue, Catholic College. So that invites all kinds of question marks, as it was again raised with the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, who claims that they had no idea, and if it was up to them, they wouldn't have invited him and wouldn't allow him to be on Catholic property. Suggesting, perhaps, that the local Archbishop Schnur is in favor of denying communion to those who advocate principles that run counter to the Catholic doctrine and dogma. So, just throwing it out there. Also throwing it out, it's really hilarious. I'm a huge fan of Congressman Thomas Massie, as we all know. He will be on the program today, coming up at 8 o'clock, 8:05. No Judge Napolitano. He's on vacation, sadly, but he is entitled to that. But we will definitely look forward to having Congressman Massie on. He tweeted yesterday, and this is comical. He said, just arrived in D.C. Did the 58 Dems who flew here unnecessarily from Texas bring the Delta variant to D.C., or were they coming here to pick it up? And this has become a comical event. Now, imagine a plane or two load of Republicans fleeing a state run by Democrats because they do not wish to, you know, chime in on controversial legislation or legislation that they view controversial. So they leave, which is exactly what the Democrats did in order that they denied a quorum to the Republicans on this voting rights issue in Texas. Just trying to make things a little safer, restore people's integrity in the vote. If anybody analyzed and took the moment in time to analyze what Texas is proposing by way of revisions to their voting law, you would realize it extends voting times, basically codifies a lot of things, and, of course, prohibits actions that were, you know, kind of from the seat of the pants, COVID-related, you know, like mail-in voting or whatever. I mean, it just shores up the integrity of the election. It gives people greater confidence in it. And it's one size fits all. They don't have separate rules for people of different races. Okay? So we can go ahead and say it's Jim Crow, and that will make you look like a complete moron. So you leave. You run away. You continue to draw the salary that the taxpayers are paying you to do a specific job, i.e. represent their interest, but you run away. Now, you know that there would be a nonstop lambasting of any plane load of Republicans who did that. And, you know, at least the Democrats fleeing Texas has at least got reported on. It's not like you have to go look for an article on it. But it's raised a lot of legitimate questions about their behavior. And it's also pointed out the comic illustration of how it is really nothing more than a theatrical event, that it will mean absolutely nothing because the governor of Texas is going to continue to call special sessions until they come back. It just isn't going to end. Now you add on top of that the idea that they're spreading coronavirus. Five of them so far on the plane, or six now, I think, have coronavirus. And then you've got someone like Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States, meeting with these Democrats. These Democrats who fled Texas are kind of viewed as little folk heroes among the Democrats in Washington, D.C. So they're being invited all over D.C. to speak at events involving, election integrity. So no one, though, is calling it a super spreader event. No one. Now, so you have the Democrats on the plane who contracted COVID. Maybe they had it when they were there. Maybe they got it when they landed in D.C. I don't know. That's Thomas Massie's point. But the White House yesterday had to confirm that they were, in fact, not disclosing the number of coronavirus cases that have shown up since these Texas Democrats showed up in D.C. Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, said that although there were breakthrough cases that have occurred among fully vaccinated staff members, they were not disclosed to the public unless they were commissioned officers. What's that mean? Well, it means a lot. First off, immediately, these are all vaccinated people. I mean, if there's going to be a fully vaccinated group, it's going to be the White House staff, right? Because they're the ones running around berating you for not getting a vaccine. And she did say breakthrough cases, which suggests folks that have been vaccinated got COVID anyway. Probably from the Democrats that fled Texas. CBS reporter Ed O'Keefe asks, you confirmed today there's been a breakthrough case? Psaki's response, a simple yep. But you're also confirming there have been other breakthrough cases? Jen Psaki's response, yep. But you hadn't previously disclosed that there had been. Psaki's response, and that's correct. So there is at least one attested positive after meeting with the Texas Democrats. There may be more other. There's others around. She did suggest or at least admit that there were others. They're just not going to let you know about it. No, nothing to see here. They called, Sturgis, the motorcycle rally last year. They called that a super spreader event before it even happened. 6:48 right now. Mike, if you don't mind holding, you got a comment. I'm looking forward to talking with you, but I've got to take a quick break here to mention Suzette Lozekamp. She's at Union Bank. She is awesome. Knows more about mortgages than, she's probably forgotten more about mortgages than most people ever hope to know. But the point being, it's 6:52, coming up at 6:53. Going to get to Mike's comment in just a second here. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. If you'd like to comment. I've been dwelling a lot on this whole idea that Joe Biden, the Catholics, been coming to Catholic University, Mount St. Joe tonight. I have mentioned before that I know people who have worked with the nuns over at Mount St. Joe, and that they are very, 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 very leftist. I don't know from personal experience, not being a Catholic and not having attended that university. I just got an instant message from a trusted person that I know and believe to be very truthful and honest, who actually attended Mount St. Joe University and also had occasion to work with the nuns at Mount St. Joe. And without naming this particular person, quote, the nuns at MSJ are all militants and disregard the bishop as much as they can. They invited Joe Biden, ignoring the bishop, if in fact the bishop even was aware about it, which I gotta believe the Archbishop of the Catholic Church had to know that the President of the United States was going to be coming to Mount St. Joe. Anyway, on a different topic, Mike's called in. Thanks for holding, Mike. Welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday.
Hey, Brian. A little off topic, but calling in about the Charlie Foxtrot of the Olympics that haven't even started yet. And, you got people catching COVID who, if you've worked all your life to get to this point, go get a shot. and go to the Olympics. And you'd
think, Mike, right?
Right.
Golly. I remember, listen, I was never, ever, ever going to be an Olympic caliber swimmer, but I did seem like I spent my entire childhood in the swimming pool and I swam for Marlins. And just the amount of, you know, practice I had for that, and I didn't go anywhere with it. And to think that would have been a wasted effort. I mean, you do it every single day. You live, eat, sleep, and breathe your training. Your entire life is all about this sport. You've been asked to participate on the U.S. Olympic team, and you're not going to get a vaccine to avoid this stuff? Seriously? All right.
Right. And then you have one team, you get the Finnish volleyball team was told they can't wear shorts, they have to wear bikini bottoms.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then you got a runner that's told that her shorts were too short.
Too short. This makes about as much sense as what?
And you have the transgender weightlifter, so I mean,
thanks for the icing on the cake, Mike. I had completely forgotten about that. We all know who's going to win. Do you think there's odds makers in Vegas who are taking bets on the outcome of Olympic events? I mean, seriously, what do you think the line is on the transgender weightlifter? 655, 55 KRCD Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Love to hear from you if you got a comment. I'll be right back after the news.
No matter what name your smart device goes by,
Alexa,
once you have its attention,
pay close attention.
Get a lot more by telling it to play.
New name.
55 KRC in Cincinnati.
It's 7:06. Here at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Maybe a different time where you are. If you're listening live over the iHeartMedia app, you can get through 55KRC.com. You can stream it anywhere. I had a caller earlier. Streams the audio because he no longer lives in the area. Maybe never lived in the area, but giving me high praise for the show, which I really appreciate. Anybody tunes in, God bless you for doing so. I think we're all here to learn something, including me. And ask out loud, sometimes rhetorical questions, and solicit comments from you. Like, feel free, call 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phone. Dominant topic of conversation, I'm just fascinated by this whole Joe Biden visit. He is coming in today. And many people within the Catholic faith are asking an out loud, legitimate question, like, well, wait a minute, what's the deal with a Catholic university inviting CNN and Don Lemon, when the president of the United States, a purported Catholic, is such a strong advocate and proponent of abortion? Someone pointed out earlier he was interested in getting rid of the Hyde Amendment. That's exactly where I was going earlier when I said he wants taxpayer dollars taken from Catholics and Protestants and Jews and Muslims to fund abortion. I mean, there's no big mystery about this. It's part of the Democratic platform. They call it, you know, women's health, and they stand firmly and strongly in favor of a woman's right to terminate her pregnancy. That's their platform. They're entitled to it. But it's not the Catholic Church's platform. Nor has it ever been. And it's a very fundamental important. And I apologize if you've been listening all morning that this is going to sound repetitive, but you need to be armed with the facts and information. It's not chicken egg thing when it comes to abortion in the Catholic Church and Democrats. Democrats adopted abortion and the pro-abortion stance as a party platform long after abortion was viewed by the Catholic Church as an abomination. So who's first? The Catholic Church and their doctrinal and dogmatic principles. Whether you subscribe to them or not is not important. I just find it baffling that the Catholic Church does not defend itself, does not stand up for its principles. I mean, profound they are. I go back to my previous conversation with Judge Napolitano on this very subject. It wasn't that long ago. And I'll interject right now. He's not on today. He's on vacation. Apologies for those who were planning on tuning in at 8:30 this morning. We're going to have Breitbart senior editor about the pushback on critical race theory. But, you know, our local Archbishop Schnur claims, hey, listen, I would have rejected Joe Biden's visit, but it's not my call. I don't know whose call it is. But Joe Biden just didn't decide yesterday to show up at Mount St. Joe, right? Someone had to have invited him to that venue. A caller earlier pointed it out. Wait a minute, Mount St. Joe? I'm not being critical of the institution. And there's two people in my world that got degrees from them. My mom went back late in life and got a degree from Mount St. Joe. So, fine. But it's not exactly a Harvard. It's not exactly even like a Xavier or University of Cincinnati in terms of its, you know, being a known university nationwide. Like, oh, wow, yeah, man. But no, Mount St. Joe. It's like little old Mount St. Joe. Seriously? How did the president end up there with Don Lemon? Some suggest perhaps it's the leftist Catholic nuns that run Mount St. Joe that are the ones that invite him. It doesn't matter. This was planned. People are invited. And if you haven't gotten your invitation yet, trust me, it's not coming in the mail today. This was known in advance to a whole bunch of people. Don Lemon himself, I mean, if he's coming in from wherever he lives, New York probably, to represent CNN and be the official moderator, right? He had to have his time schedule and his plans in place early on. So this denial from the archdiocese or the archbishop's office, I kind of question. No, I'm not calling the man a liar, but by the same token, you're saying you didn't know about it and that you have no control at all? A Catholic, again, this is the religion by which the university identifies. A Catholic university is not going to be swayed or influenced by whatever the Archdiocese of Cincinnati says? That says a lot about the power of the archdiocese, doesn't it? I mean, it says it's not positive. I have no sway over there. Mount St. Joseph University operates independent from the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. Well, wait a second. Doesn't the archdiocese really represent the Catholic Church here locally? It's almost as if Mount St. Joe is kind of like Joe Biden, purporting to be Catholic, yet not following the doctrinal dogmatic principles of the Catholic Church. And the archdiocese darn well does have a say over what Catholics say, can't say, and do, and what the principles are, and whether or not they're going to be held accountable on some level. I don't know how law enforcement, and I'm using my quote fingers here, how law enforcement works within the Catholic Church, but there is certainly a hierarchy. You know, you got priests and your bishops and your archbishops and your cardinals, and then there's the Pope, right? Someone's got to have authority over the minions and those below them within the church hierarchy, and I would think the archbishop would have some sway over nuns, and certainly, on some level, the president, who is merely one member of the church. Obviously with a lot of power and influence, obviously a political lightning rod, obviously someone that might cause a bit of problem for you if you, the Catholic Church, decide to assert your doctrine and dogmatic principles and say, hell no, we are not going to abide by this anymore. No more communion for people who advocate for abortion. Sorry, you know, this is what we're all about. And, you know, if you're a Catholic university, we dissuade you strongly and compel you to reject the idea of welcoming pro-abortion people to come and speak at your university, particularly when they are Catholic. If they're not Catholic, then you really don't have an objection to it. You could invite them on as a controversial speaker that is going to speak about principles that you are fundamentally opposed to, and it would be a welcome event. This is all about no one holding Joe Biden accountable for being pro-abortion. And you're actually supporting him by inviting him there without even raising this particular controversy. And I got my hand up. Anybody in the listening audience think Joe Biden is going to have a question asked of him about this topic while at a Catholic university? Will anyone have the huevos rancheros to say, Joe, don't you find it problematic, your advocacy for abortion? While we are here at this Catholic university and while you run around purporting to be this devout Catholic, there's an elephant in the room, and it's not a Republican Party. It's this doctrinal dogmatic principle that is fundamental to the Catholic Church that you are diametrically opposed to. Care to comment? Does anybody think that's going to happen tonight? Tim, welcome to the program and a very happy Wednesday to you.
Thanks. Hey, you know, one of the things is I think there's sort of a subliminal thing going on here. You know, it's just sort of the attitude of the Democrats is we can do anything, go anywhere we want, and, you know, any type of authority just snub you in the face. And, you know, Delhi in that area is sort of a heart of Catholic on the west side of town. And it's almost like, yeah, we're coming to your town, and we're going to do what we want to do, and we really don't care what you think. But the other part of it is, you know, there might be five nuns left over there. And, you know, when a lot of the real Catholics, when they think of, you know, that order, it's sort of PU, you know, it stinks. The people that go to church, they know where the institutions are that are really Catholic and aren't. And obviously, Mount St. Joe is not one of those anymore. So
right.
Just want to let you know that.
Well, and as I pointed out earlier, I did not name this person. They will remain nameless about who has attended Mount St. Joe University as well as worked with the Mount on projects and referred to the nuns there as militant in the leftist sense of the word. And I've heard nothing but that for all the years. And I grew up in Delhi, man. I grew up in an all-Catholic neighborhood. No, I'm not Catholic. I mention that quite often. But that is the word has been used to describe the nuns at Mount St. Joe on many occasions in my lifetime. Do I know that personally to be the case? No, I don't think I've ever met a nun from Mount St. Joe. So it's not Brian Thomas saying this. It's just people that I respect and who I trust who don't seem to have a necessary grudge on their shoulder vis-a-vis the college itself, just pointing out that they're a bunch of leftists, and they, you know, being militant leftists, probably have no problem with the idea of abortion, which, you know, is a problem in and of itself. So Joe says, get one more in real quick. Edward, welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind today, Ed?
I think that the blowback that the Biden administration will see in Western Hills in Delhi today will be incredible. And I think Joe is just a casino. You've heard of rhinos, Republican name only.
Yeah.
Joe is a Catholic in name only. He's a casino.
Yeah, cafeteria Catholic, some call it. It's a good point, Ed. It really is. And I think there is a protest scheduled. I've got some the news article on that. I'll pass out the information so folks know when and where to be there, to the extent they choose to, assert their Catholicism or otherwise protest Joe Biden. Have a great day. Edward, great hearing from you. 716, coming up on 717, Ed, Richard, and Rose, and Dave, we'll get to your calls. .721 right now. Happy Wednesday. Brian Thomas right here. Looking forward to Congressman Thomas Massie coming up after the top of the hour news, talking about inflation, the people being arrested for the January 6th. And they're not getting a speedy trial. The question of speedy trial comes up quite frequently, and I'm not quite sure why Thomas Massie wants to address that particular topic, but I think it's an important one. You don't have to waive your right to a speedy trial. The prosecutor is then obligated to present a case to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that you're guilty of the offense to which you were charged. And if they don't have enough time to prepare their case, they probably won't. May be able to get a good plea deal out of it by not waiving your right to speedy trial. Anyway, White House, Facebook, censorship, all of that with Congressman Massie. I'm going to go back to the phones, talking about Catholics on the West Side. Going to be entertaining Joe Biden at Mount St. Joe University. It's raised a lot of controversy, and the Archbishop's office was asked about this, and how in the heck is it a Catholic university, you know, host a Catholic president who is in favor of and advocates for abortion. Just so you know, I said I'd look to find out what the protest situation, according to the reporting from the Enquirer. I'll give Emily DeLetter credit for this one, under the caption, "What We Know About President Joe Biden's Wednesday Visit to Cincinnati." Right to Life for Greater Cincinnati asked the public to call the university a protest. Also, they want you to call the Archbishop's office. But it says, on Tuesday night, the group announced a protest planned for today, 7 p.m., corner of Neeb and Delhi Pike, in front of the Mount St. Joe University sign. Now, that should make for a really interesting event. And if you get a whole lot of people showing up right there, I'm just wondering what the motorcade situation is going to be like. Apparently, Joe Biden will be landing at CVG around 3:40, And then he's heading on to a local union training center before going over to what they continue to characterize as a town hall. And we all know it nothing remotely like a town hall because, well, the residents of the community have not been invited. Hey, Richard, thanks for calling this morning. Happy Wednesday.
Hey, Brian, how are you this morning?
I am well, and I hope you can say the same. Thanks.
Absolutely. There's not going to be any hard questions asked.
I know that.
It's a town hall in name only. They were saying yesterday, I think it was on Hannity's show, might have been Willie's, that the questioners are identified ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
They are supplied questions to ask, and they must ask the questions that they've been supplied with
right.
word for word.
Right. You know why, Richard? For a whole multitude of reasons. Clearly, the main one is to keep away from third rail issues like how come a Catholic president can advocate for abortion and still be welcome at a Catholic university? Ignoring that, though, Joe Biden has to memorize the prepared answers to his questions because sometimes he can't keep up with the earbud in his ear. You know, they're telling him what to say and he pauses and tries to condense it and comprehend the answers to questions and he can't quite do it. And then he'll look at notes and say, well, here's what they told me to say. So, yeah, that protects the president of the United States from having to operate on the fly. Frightening. Thanks, Richard.
No
I appreciate that, my friend. I truly do. Let's get Rose. Hey, Rose, happy Wednesday. I know you've got a thought about, or two about this subject.
Happy Wednesday, Brian. You bet I do.
Rose, for those who are not familiar, I know Rose from all the listener lunches. She's been listening for years, and she calls in. Rose, if I'm wrong, you correct me, but I believe you to be a devout Catholic.
I certainly am, a truly devout Catholic. In the true sense of the word,
yeah,
not like Joe Biden.
Well, okay, with that established, and before you make your point, Rose, I'm going to go back to the reporting by the Enquirer, which says something to the effect of, yeah, here, let me get it. Let me get it, because I don't want to misinterpret our Emily DeLetter's reporting. Biden, this is the quote from the paragraph, Biden, a Democrat and Catholic who often speaks of his faith, has drawn criticism from conservative Catholics and Catholic leaders for support for abortion and access to same-sex marriage. Rose, I didn't realize it was only conservative Catholics who disapprove of abortion. Is that's old school mentality, is it?
No, that's the Catholic doctrine and dogma.
Thank you.
And if you can't be Catholic and be pro-abortion.
That's kind of my understanding. Right? Again, I'm not a theologian or a Catholic.
Okay, and those nuns, apparently they're not under the auspices of the diocese, and they could do what they darn please.
Yeah.
But I consider them like the nuns on the bus. You know, they're not really Catholic. And if I had children college age, I would make sure my children didn't go anywhere near that institution. There are all across the country. There are institutions of higher learning that call themselves Catholic, but are anything but. So the parents have to do their homework and know which particular institutions are truly Catholic. Two of which I would recommend highly because they live there. Not only do they teach, and they teach well, so the student is successful in life, but they live their Catholicism.
Right.
It permeates the institution. And that would be Franciscan University in Ohio and Ave Maria University in Florida.
So what you're saying is if you're desirous of a Catholic college education that includes training in Catholic faith or at least supports Catholicism
and lives it,
then that's where you should go.
Right.
The statement from the Mount St. Joe University reads as follows, Rose, before we part company this morning.
Yeah.
Quote, the university has always been and will continue to be a diverse and inclusive place where people from different races, ethnicities, social backgrounds, beliefs, and religions can come together to discuss and share their unique perspectives. We look forward to introducing the Mount to a nationally televised primetime audience. Well, it doesn't sound like the Mount shares your perspective of what a Catholic university is and should be. I don't mind their inclusivity, but if they're not teaching and utilizing their faith as a Catholic university for their students and on behalf of their students, then why bother even calling it a Catholic university? It's just a university. Thanks, Rose. Appreciate your call. As always, 728 right now. Dave's on the phone. Dave, I know you've been at hold. You don't mind holding for another moment. You'll be first when I return after mentioning odor exit. Nope, won't get this. Talk Station 749-5500, 800-823 Talk. Pound 550 on AT&T phones. We're getting to local stories. I promised Dave he'd be first out of the gate, and he is. Dave, thanks so much for holding, and welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. You had a bit of a rant on breakthrough cases.
Brought about by the D.C. Democrats fleeing to Washington. Apparently, Jen Psaki has not identified the total number of staffers other than the Democrats themselves who have got COVID. We know about those. I think there's six of them now. Apparently, they did a little bit of super spreading while they were up there having all their meetings about voter suppression and Jim Crow 2 and all of that. Raising a bit of a concern, also revealing the double standard that the Democrats apply insofar as what constitutes a super spreader event.
Yes, and I hope they pass it all around.
Illustrating, as you pointed out, that apparently the vaccine doesn't work quite as well as they've been telling us.
Yes, and I want to touch on that briefly. So I'm doing research, and I'm having a tough time nailing down the actual number. But the lowest percentage that I've seen is 44% of the breakthrough cases, of the cases of the Delta variant, are breakthrough cases, meaning people have been fully vaccinated people getting sick with this Delta variant.
Wow.
And then the highest number I've seen is 98%. So that's a pretty wide range. But the point is the vaccines are not as effective as being claimed. That's item one. Item two, and this is sort of local, there's an attorney named Thomas Renz from Ohio, R-E-N-Z, I think is how he spells it. He has filed a federal lawsuit to have full disclosure on the number of people who are actually dying from these vaccines, and he has a whistleblower claiming 45,000.
Yeah, one of my listeners, Maureen, with whom I have that $1,000 bet about Donald Trump being declared the winner of the last year's election, I say, no, that's not going to happen. She insisted it does. Anyway, the money's going to go to charity, but she did send me a link to that lawsuit yesterday, and I looked at it, and it's rather interesting, and interesting that you can really hardly find it, even when you're looking for it, when you're searching online, Dave.
Yes, well, we have 55 carries this show, but only an hour of it, and I wish 55 would carry more of it. It's John B. Wells. I think he calls it Caravan to Midnight, but it was on his website that I found it.
Well, I appreciate you passing that along, and, well, I mean, it is a document of court record now, so I can't remember which district court it was filed in. You mentioned he was a local attorney. My recollection was that it was filed down south somewhere. I just can't recall which court. But court records are public records. They're computerized usually. You can access them by doing, you know, going online and jumping into any particular given court records database. So I suspect that, you know, once rumor and word gets out that this lawsuit has been filed, more attention will be drawn to that point, which is people, at least it's been alleged, are dying from the vaccine itself.
Well, here are two more quick points on that. One, he's filing for an injunction to stop all of these vaccines. And the other point is, and this is from a separate source, and this is from the one where I got the 98% figure, that the people who are in hospitals right now with the Delta variant, almost all of them, there were two that had not been vaccinated, but the rest of them had been vaccinated, and this came about as the result of a doctor being told that she had to get the vaccination. She told them to pound sand. Good for her.
Wow. Well, we're still allowed to do that in this country, Dave, and exercise those rights while you got them, because someday we may look back and go, wow, I guess I should have fought for my freedom and my liberty. Dave, great hearing from you. Thanks again for holding. I appreciate it. 736, coming up on 737, 55 Care CD Talk Station. I'd like to hear from you, too. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Also, want to mention my friends at Plum Tide Plumbing. Right now, 741, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Hope you're having a good Wednesday. Normally excited about 830 because Judge Ann Napolitano is still looking forward to 830. It's not as if I'm unhappy about having Breitbart Senior Editor-in-Chief talking about pushback on critical race theory, which is what's going to happen at 830. Judge Ann Napolitano on vacation today. So Congressman Thomas Massie coming up after the top of the hour. He'll be talking about inflation and his follow-up on the those being arrested for the January 6th call it what you want, riot, whatever. Speedy trials come up as a question mark, but also, locking people up for 8 months for some could call comparatively harmless activity. Anyway, been talking about Joe Biden's visit today. He's coming to Mount St. Joe, raising some serious dogmatic and doctrinal principles about the Catholic Church and whether or not there's anybody still defending the Catholic Church's position as it relates to abortion. Nobody's called out Joe Biden on the carpet for this, and nobody will ask him a question about it tonight at the so-called town hall. And I apologize for my allergies today. They are driving me absolutely crazy. If I sound a little bit congested or you hear a pause in what I'm talking, probably it's because I hit the cough button in order to sniffle or sneeze. Man, it's bad today for me. Over to the phones we go on that Catholic topic. We've got Mary on the phone. Hey, Mary, welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday. Turn your radio down, Mary.
You don't mean Marie, do you?
Oh, maybe it is Marie. That's my fault. I'm looking at it. Okay. Welcome to the show.
Well, I'm Catholic, and I was talking to a priest the other day, and they're working on not giving communion to Biden.
Right. The question mark is whether that will be ultimately the decree coming from the bishops, right?
Yeah. Did you hear that, too?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. No, this came from a priest, and no, they're not going to give him communion.
Well, maybe. And you know what? That sounds to me like the right decision because, Marie...
He's not a practicing Catholic.
Well, exactly. I'm not Catholic, so I feel a little weird about talking about it, but I grew up in an all-Catholic neighborhood with all friends that are Catholic.
Oh, yeah, you were from the West Side.
I know about Catholicism, Marie, and I know that's a tenet of the Catholic Church, and it shocks my conscience. It always has. The treatment of Nancy Pelosi, for example. I mean, for years and years, she has been one of the staunchest proponents of abortion. They never said a word to her that we know of. I mean, the Archdiocese of San Francisco, the Cardinal, the Pope, nobody has
that's
called her
right.
out to the carpet for
no,
her strong advocacy.
Right. But I heard that they're not going to give him communion. He's not a practicing Catholic.
Well, I know a lot of Catholics who feel the same way. And if you are so inclined, along with your Catholic friends, and you want to do the protest, it's tonight at Nebrobe and Delhi Pike in front of the Mount St. Joe University sign. Marie, thank you so much for listening and for calling in this morning. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Yeah, according to the information, Joe's going to land at 340 at CVG. He's got a motorcade taking him to a local union training center. Westside Jim said it was on Harrison Avenue. I don't know. I think that's where he what he posted. So after meeting with the union members, he is off to Mount St. Joe. They call it a town hall. It isn't. And the word from the Archdiocese office is that they have no say in the matter. That is what Archbishop Dennis Schnur said. He also said that, you know, if it were up to him, that he would not have granted approval for Joe Biden to show up on Catholic premises. And again, I'll go back to the fact that if it was anything but a Catholic person, anybody but a Catholic person coming to speak at a university, I'd be in favor of it, and I would have no criticism. You could ask the staunchest pro-abortion person on the planet to come to your devoutly Catholic university. I'm not suggesting that Mount St. Joe's a devout Catholic university. Rose called earlier, and she's aware of them. You could call them and have them speak and have them offer their defense of abortion and their position as it relates to, that would not be embracing it or welcoming it, or it would not, and it could not and would not change your doctrinal dogmatic belief system. It's just a counterpoint. This is different than that. This is someone who walks around and proclaims to be a devout Catholic, yet preaches anti-Catholic teaching. That is someone who is undermining your, my Catholic friend's, faith. Someone who is undermining it and delegitimizing it, or at least selling it for something that it is not. which is a religion that allows for abortion. That's not what the Catholic religion allows for. There are a lot of cafeteria Catholics out there. I know this is a third rail for a lot of Catholics in the hierarchy because, oh, my God, I don't want to lose a parishioner. There's a lot of folks in the audience in the parish here who really have no problem with abortion. However, I guess until the Pope changes his mind and changes the doctrinal dogmatic principles of the Catholic Church, it's a very firm one. 747 55 KRC, the talk station. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. A quick time mention here, 22-3 Firearms. I love their the store, the gun shop, the range, and the people who run it and own it. They are just absolutely top quality, top shelf folks. Indoor range, the cleanest you've ever shot on. It's huge. It recirculates the air through a HEPA air filtered air system every 4 minutes. That big place is every 4 minutes. I just find that hard to believe. Range safety officers always there to give you guidance, make sure you're not doing something extraordinarily stupid. And the way the range is set up, your booths have a kind of a gate that's about waist high that closes behind you. It's a swing gate. It's not locked. But it gives you a greater sense of comfort from those that are walking behind you. I've been to some ranges where some of the people on the range are a little squirrely, and having them walk around behind me without any really kind of physical barrier there, it's not comforting. 22-3 absolutely has got that down. It's a great gun shop. They've got ammo. Call them if you have a particular caliber you're looking for. And they also buy your firearm. So if you've got a couple extra laying around, I could always say, well, I don't know any of my friends that ever sell a firearm. They just get more. But if you got something to sell, 22-3 is in business to buy them from you. And of course, resell them to somebody else. 22, the number 22, followed by the word 3 spelled out. 22-3. Uh, 7:51 right now here at 55 KRC Talk Station. Congressman Thomas Massie up after the top of the hour of the news to talk about, among other things, inflation, but also address the January 6th issue, the zealous prosecution of anybody in any way, shape, or form remotely connected with that. Its prioritization of that over really all other crimes. Excuse me. And also a speedy trial, which always is at play anytime you're faced with a criminal prosecution. They got to try you within a certain period of time unless you, the keeper of the right to a speedy trial, waive that right. Tends to present a problem to the prosecution quite often, but also the defense attorneys. If you have to abide by the speedy trial right, quite often defense attorneys recommend waiving it to give them time to prepare your defense, which also allows the prosecutors to have more time to prepare their case. Remember, they have the tougher job because they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you're guilty of the crime that they've charged you with. So anyhow, that's a topic for the good congressman. I just wanted to bring this one up. Speaking of things law-related, which we usually talk about with Judge Napolitano, but he's not going to be on this coming hour. Vacation. Interesting and, good news if you're a First Amendment fan. The Third District Court of Appeals unanimously ruled on Friday. This is a California Third District. That a state law that was enacted back in 2017 violates people's freedom of speech rights. It required, past tense, unless this appeals court ruling is overturned, required nursing homes to use patients' preferred pronouns. It was SB 2019. It was written by a senator named Weiner, of all things, from San Francisco. There's a shock. Maybe Weiner. We're just going to call him Senator Scott Weiner. Provided penalties and potential jail time if you didn't use the preferred pronoun of the patient in the clinic. Include several other provisions requiring a health facility to honor the gender identity of a patient, meaning that the patient must be admitted to the room that comports with his or her chosen gender, allowed to use whatever bathroom he or she wanted to use, and wear whatever clothing that they wanted to use. But specifically, the part that was at play here is that it would punish people who willfully and repeatedly refuse to use a transgender resident's preferred name or pronouns in public retirement or housing institutions. So we have state involvement. This is public health and retirement housing institution. So it is operated by the state. The rule applies to that. Now, remember, anytime the state's involved, they have to honor your constitutional rights, correct? So how is this a violation of one's constitutional right? Well, you can't be compelled to speak. You can't be told by government specifically what to do, or you can't be forced to anyway. Under threat of fine and penalty, you must use these particular words. That's as much a violation of your free speech rights. That is if they prevented you from saying something you wanted to say. Prior restraint, for example. They can't tell you not to speak on any given subject matter in advance because it wouldn't pass muster. And constitutional muster, when it comes to the First Amendment, has to pass what they call strict scrutiny, which means the state better have a darn well compelling objective to achieve, which the court gave them. They said, fine. You know, equality with transgender and the rest of the population is a compelling objective. However, this is beyond the pale. It says, we agree that the pronoun provision is a content-based restriction on speech. The law compels long-term care facility staff to alter the message that they would prefer to convey, either by hosting a message as required by the resident or by refraining from using pronouns at all. That was what the argument was. Well, you know, you can't make them say "je," but they don't have to use pronouns at all. So they have the option to be quiet. No, you are in essence forcing them to be quiet because what they want to say would result in a fine or penalty. So good outcome for the First Amendment. I don't know how many people you think this really impacts. I mean, seriously, in the grand scheme of things, let's keep this relative. How many transgender patients are in public health settings or public retirement? What is the total number of people? And it gets this much attention. You can imagine the legal fees to date dealing with the outcome of that Senate bill, which obviously took a long time to draft and prepare and talk about, was the subject matter of lobbying efforts, et cetera, et cetera. The money involved just surrounding that one little thing. And the aftermath has just got to be overwhelming. Congressman Thomas Massie up after the news. I hope you can stick around.
The cost of a barbecue is down from last year.
Clay Travis and Buck Sexton.
Hot dogs.
Today at noon.
The Biden economic plan is working.
On 55 KRC.
It's 8:05 right now at 55 KRC, the talk station, and a very happy Wednesday to you. It would be a happier Wednesday, but Judge Andrew Napolitano is on vacation, so we won't be hearing from him at the bottom of the hour. We will be hearing from Joel Pollack, senior editor from Breitbart News, on the fight against critical race theory. But it is a great Wednesday when we've got Congressman Thomas Massie on the program, and welcome back. At least we have one of the good ones on. Is this extremist programming, Congressman Massie?
You know, I said on Twitter this week that it's extremist if you believe that the legislatures write the laws. Like, if I go out and say, wait, in order for it to be a law, it has to be passed by a lawmaker, whether that's in the Senate and the House here at the federal level or at the state level or at the city council level. That's extremist viewpoint now.
Wow.
Because the implications are that all this other crap is not laws.
Well, wait. So what you are doing is addressing the very thing that I've been arguing all along. For example, when Governor DeWine started issuing his random edicts and mandates on when we could and could not eat and drink out in public, and shutting down what they thought were unnecessary businesses. I mean, how insulting is that if it's you who's been deemed unnecessary? But I kept saying, there is no legal authority for this. The only person or people over whom the governor or the health director, and it's actually the health director, have any authority in this pandemic, absent a law being passed, is someone who has been identified as infected. You can quarantine under the law here in Ohio an infected person, but you can't lock down people who aren't infected. They don't have that authority. A law must be passed, Congressman.
Look at the authority that CDC claimed on the eviction moratorium. They said they have the power in the name of a pandemic to violate private contracts,
yeah,
to suspend private contracts that are governed by state law, not federal law. And the Supreme Court heard this and this is a really disappointing thing. Five of them agreed that the CDC didn't have this power, but only four of them would rule against the CDC because one of them said that this was Kavanaugh, that, well, they promised they're only going to do it for a little bit longer.
Oh, so, that makes it all right.
So even though it's unconstitutional,
it's expedient. That's why.
We'll allow it to stand. And then, you know what really grates on me is when I get on the airplane and they say, federal law requires that you wear a mask. You know, I vote on all those federal laws and, you know, I read them and I never saw one of those about requiring a mask on airplanes.
Right.
It is an executive order. It is not a federal law.
Indeed.
This is not just nitpicking here.
No, this is constitutional, basic, you know, law 101, Congressman Massey. It makes perfect sense. And the other component of it is also congressional delegation of rulemaking authority, which has basically the color and effect of law, but at least it springs from a specifically identified authority within a law that has been passed. Then they just let the bureaucrats on the front lines write the rules and regulations, which they're unelected and unaccounted for, and makes it more difficult to deal with these arbitrary rules and regs.
And then we complain about it here in the House. And even when we have a majority, we complain about it. But I think it's false indignation, because we could stop it instantly by defunding it. We can write up in the next appropriation, if we were in the majority, we're not. But if you had a majority of conservatives who disagreed with some kind of rulemaking, it would be simple enough to just say, none of the money hereby appropriated shall be used to enforce X, Y, or Z, which means nobody even sitting at work can even use their brain to think about it, because we're paying you if you're a federal employee, and you can't even print one page on the printer. Because
right.
The paper is bought by the federal government, which is authorized by the Congress. We could stop this stuff in its tracks if and when we get in the majority. I hope we do.
There was a period of time not that long ago, Congressman, and this is not a poke at you, but Republicans were in the majority and did have the presidency and yet continued to spend, and this is not an insult to drunken sailors, but everybody gets the analogy.
It is an insult.
Continuing to spend like those with a terminal cancer diagnosis and one day to live. I mean, you know, smoke 'em while you got 'em mode. Nothing happened. I was just so disappointed by that, and I know you are as well. But it's a little difficult to maintain a principle. It's really difficult to maintain as a party platform the idea, the notion that the Republicans are the party of fiscal responsibility when they didn't do jack squat to correct the ship.
Hey, while we're talking about that, I know we were planning to talk about inflation today.
Yeah.
What I love is that the Republicans up here are blaming the last $2 trillion that Biden spent for the inflation, which we're seeing. But, the first $2 trillion that we spent under Trump had nothing
right.
to do with the inflation.
No inflationary pressures there. No, not at all.
How does $2 trillion spent by a Democrat cause inflation more than $2 trillion spent by a Republican?
Just the spin you put on it.
it's all told, it's about $6 trillion that's gone out the door. Plus,
jeez Louise.
Even under President Trump, I voted against it, but we, the royal we, paid people not to work.
Yeah.
And that causes inflationary pressures, too. If you're not manufacturing cars and appliances, and people still need to buy cars and appliances, that even if you weren't printing money, that itself would cause inflation.
Well, and they caused demand increase merely by writing every man, woman, and child a check that people really didn't have anything to spend it on other than household appliances, putting even further pressure on it. Hey, look, I got $1,200. I can finally afford that new washer and dryer I wanted. Oh, look, there aren't any on the shelf, and I'm going to have to wait a year for them to show up. So it's crazy.
It is. Now, some of the people absolutely needed that money, for instance, because they were put out of a job to save their house, which is another thing that's troubling right now. Real estate, just raw land prices are going up. And, you know, some people may call this a conspiracy theory, but it's going to happen when money is free or almost free to a certain class of people. And when money gets harder to obtain for another class of people. Then the land, what do you do when you have free money? What do you spend it on? You can buy land because it's never, you know, the value of it is real. So one of the concerns that is real, this is not just a conspiracy theory, is that homeowners, we're going to have fewer homeowners and more renters as the real estate changes hands.
Absolutely. And I can give you a real life illustration of that. My son, who's 28, my wife's going to kill me. hardworking kid. I think he's saved up enough for a down payment on a place, and would love to move from where he is now. He's renting an apartment with a friend of his, and he would rather be on his own, rather own his own piece of property. But the real estate prices have gone through the roof. He's just as frustrated as he can be. There isn't anything in his price point anymore. It just isn't there. So, you know, a young person who would willingly purchase real estate and real property really has been priced out of the market because of this boom that's gone on.
Yes, and it's troubling. And the people who aren't priced out are the institutional investors.
Oh yeah,
that can get access to money at very, very low rates.
Sure,
and go snatch this stuff up.
Pay cash up front.
And it will have implications that last decades.
Oh, yeah, because I think one of the realities of this, Congressman Massey, and I think it's what you're alluding to, commercial investors are going around and buying up single-family homes.
Correct.
And then renting them.
Correct.
Renting them. So you got a bunch of Airbnbs now. What used to be a residential neighborhood is going to be a bunch of, you know, potentially transient temporary workers who will take occupancy for a while and then move on.
And this is one of the recognized benefits of home ownership. When individuals own their homes, is you develop communities.
Yeah.
People have a vested interest in the property and the neighborhood, and that will diminish. There's nothing wrong with renting, but I'm saying it is beneficial to the neighborhood to have a certain number of people who do have invested their savings in seeing a good outcome for the neighborhood, and can't just pull up roots and say, all right, we're out of here. This just got too ugly.
Like anybody who is capable of doing that used to live in California.
Oh, and now that we're talking about rent, also there's another disincentive if you're a small, let's say landlord, for instance, and you're renting property to somebody, is this eviction moratorium, which we touched on before. How are you going to keep making your payment? Let's say you're an elderly couple and you've downsized and you're renting out. You were able to buy a smaller house and you're going to rent out the family house that you grew your family in before they all left the nest. How are you going to keep making the payment on that, or even just pay the taxes, if the federal government says you can't collect rent on it?
It really is a bizarre, bizarre outcome, and it sounds frightfully unlawful. And I think the basis of your first point you made, it's not lawful.
No.
At some point, some court will actually resolve this. At least I hope so. Let us pause with Congressman Massey. We will return. We've got multiple topics to talk with him about, including his follow-up. It's been about 2 months to the day since the congressman wrote a letter seeking some answers from our Attorney General, Merrick Garland, about the January 6th and the prosecutions and roundup. It's been surprisingly unusual and seemingly unconstitutional reality. More with Congressman Massey after I mentioned the VA, and God bless our veterans. Thank you so much for enlisting. Thank you for serving our country. And if you got that honorable discharge, welcome to free health care. VA benefits, you earned them as part of your salary package, although I know you didn't fully realize that while you were out fighting wars or otherwise protecting the interests of the United States, but you did it. And if you haven't signed up for your benefits, you just need to get in touch with the VA eligibility office. Those with honorable discharges, you sealed your fate when you got that DD-214. So, didn't even have to serve in combat or get injured during military duty, and they've set a table for you, a place at the table. You aren't taking benefits away from somebody else. And even if you have your own insurance, your employer, your spouse, you still get your benefits. So call the VA eligibility office, 513-475-6499. That's 475-6499. KRCD Talk Station. Happy Wednesday. Brian Thomas here with Congressman Thomas Massey. Always enjoy the conversations with Congressman Massey because he's logical and reasonable and loves the freedom that is guaranteed by our Constitution. Although our Constitution seems to be trod upon quite often. I know that's happened in connection with the January 6th, call it insurrection or riot or the most, what is it, the worst thing that's ever happened on the history of the United States of America. I mean, I think some people blown it out of proportion. Now, Congressman Massey, I was in a state of disbelief while it was going on. I was screaming at my television about how terrible the optics were, and I was screaming at my television in vain, wondering where in the hell Donald Trump was, not getting on Twitter and screaming at everybody to get the hell out of the building. It was pointless, a pointless, wasted effort, but here we are living with it. And yes. It happens to be something that the Department of Justice now has made it its number one top priority, more than drug enforcement, more than Portland and the riots and the $1 billion worth of damage that was caused by them. What is going on here, Congressman?
Yes, over the last summer, 2,000 officers injured, $1 billion of damage in the riots that transpired over the summer, and the DOJ doesn't seem to be that interested in that compared to the event on January 6th. And like you, Brian, I did not agree with what happened on January 6th. In fact, Chip Roy and I wrote an open letter 3 days before January 6th asking people not to engage in what might happen on January 6th. You can go find the letter. It's still on my website, my congressional website. So, and I know this upsets some people, but Chip Roy and I did not vote to overturn the election. But that puts us in a unique position right now. We, in terms of, you know, they can't lump us in and say, oh, you're just mad about the election or you blah, blah, blah. No, we have great concerns about the election, but we recognize that Joe Biden won the election. I'm upset about the shenanigans that have happened, and there was fraud. It's like saying, was there any fraud? Well, it's like saying, is there any shoplifting at the mall? Of course, there's shoplifting at the mall every day. The question is what degree, and the mail-in ballots invited it. We got to get back to in-person voting. But this puts Chip Roy and I in a unique position to ask the Attorney General and the DOJ to tell us just exactly what they are doing to punish or incarcerate or over-prosecute these individuals who participated in that protest on January 6th. We've heard of overly aggressive tactics. We've heard of the wrong people being raided at their houses. Yeah. One couple had their constitution taken from them as evidence.
We need Congressman, I think we need to defund these law enforcement officers.
You know, there are 43. We had a hearing last week, and I found out there are 43 federal branches or agencies within the federal government that have their own police forces. And I said, well, maybe there's some agreement we can come to there. Maybe don't need 43 federal police forces. But in any case, on May 13th, we asked the Attorney General for a briefing. Here's the other reason Chip Roy and I are in a unique position. We both serve on the Judiciary Committee, which has oversight over the DOJ, and at some point, the Attorney General is going to have to come and testify in front of our committee. So we are being polite, I think, by sending these letters and saying that you need to brief us on, the tactics and the disposition of these folks. Also, very concerning, and this is related, but not necessarily in the letter, we're very concerned about the conditions at the jail in Washington, D.C., where some people are being held 23 hours a day in a cell.
That's rather cruel and unusual. They only put people in solitary confinement who are a potential harm to themselves, or rather ultra-violent, harmful to others, or they themselves are a target for violence or attacks. I don't know we have that situation here.
That's the thing. We've got citizens with no history of or propensity for violence.
Not even getting bail.
Not bail, not eligible for bail.
Yeah.
And fortunately, some of the judges in some of these cases are telling the DOJ, look, you're crazy. This is trespassing, and you're just crazy for trying to get this. But not all of the defendants or accused have been treated so well. One of the ideas that one of my colleagues here, Louis Gohmert, has floated is that we should just go down to the jail in D.C., we should just some congressmen go down there and say, let us in. We want to see the conditions.
There you go. And you have, I mean, you wrote the first letter May 13th to Merrick Garland. He hadn't responded to that, so you just fired off another letter a couple days ago. Yep. I presume there's been no word back from the Department of Justice on that one either.
No word back yet. And by the way, if we get the majority in the House, Jim Jordan is the ranking member on Judiciary, the committee that I mentioned that Chip Roy and I serve on. He becomes the chairman.
Ooh.
And everything changes.
The world will be a different place. Let us pray.
These letters will get answered.
God, that happens. Yes, no question about it. And I have a feeling Merrick Garland will be sitting in front of the committee in a matter of moments. Now, before we part company, mandatory vaccines. We talked earlier about the lawlessness of what's going on, the lack of authority. Can we be forced to get a vaccine? I mean, I have natural immunity, Congressman Massey. I got COVID. I had a bad case of it. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But I'm not about to get a vaccine because I have natural immunity.
Same case for me. I have natural immunity, so I'm not getting the vaccine until somebody can show me some evidence that it would benefit me. Rand Paul is in the same situation.
Yeah.
They cannot force anybody legally. Now, the White House is going to encourage employers and schools to coerce people to do it. But the other thing that's troubling is that the military, there's longstanding history. They can force you to take vaccines. That's a condition of signing up. But I don't think it's appropriate to force this vaccine on members of the military, particularly those who've already got natural immunity. So I've introduced a bill based on members of the military calling me. These are officers. These are pilots. These are skilled people that we've invested in their careers in the military. They're talking about leaving.
Okay.
And I don't know, people say, oh, you can't just quit the military. Well, you can't just quit the military, but some of the officers can refuse to, you know, re-up, or they can resign their commission. When we had the anthrax mandatory vaccine, the GAO did a report, said we lost many, many members of the military, and some of them even were willing to take dishonorable discharges or general discharges, which I do not recommend. I don't want this to happen. That's why I've introduced this bill. I've already got 24 co-sponsors, including a doctor in Congress, and at least four members of the military who are serving in Congress are on this bill. And so hopefully we can get some momentum. If we can't get the bill passed, then at least we're sending a very strong message by getting more members of Congress on this bill saying, do not force our military to take this experimental vaccine. They're at very low risk compared to the general population.
Fair enough. Congressman Massey, always enjoyable conversation. I wish you the best. And until we get to talk again, the best of health to you and your family.
Thank you. You as well, Brian.
Always a pleasure, my friend. It is 8:27, coming up at 8:28 right now. Just shy of 8:32 here at 55 KRCD Talk Station. On the heels of Congressman Thomas Massey, normally I'm saying welcome Judge Ed Napolitano, but he's on vacation this week, so I am blessed to have Joel Pollack, Breitbart Senior Editor-at-Large, stand in his stead in this period of time to talk about something that really, I think, has set the world on fire. At least it's making them pay attention. Have things really come to a head? Have parents woken up? Joel Pollack, Breitbart Senior Editor, welcome back to the program. It's always great talking with you.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
One thing from COVID, I keep saying I'm always looking for something positive in a sea of negativity, and there's nothing really great about COVID-19. The lawlessness, the edicts, the diktats, the arbitrary whims that the powers that be on full display. We got to see him. We got a real heavy dose of him, and it really starts causing people to ask questions. I just got off the phone with Congressman Thomas Massey, and that was one of the points he made, the basic lawlessness. But what it did give us also is a little insight into what our children are facing in school. We stood over their shoulders on their Zoom calls. We helped them with their homework. We got to listen to what their teachers actually said to them. And we learned that there's a thing going on out in the world called critical race theory, and it's being embraced. This has got parents enraged. Joel, are we going to see a real, true grassroots backlash, and will it have an impact on our school and what our children are being taught?
Right, so there's a nationwide uprising against critical race theory, which is the idea that our country was founded on racist principles and that all of our institutions are marred by the original sin of this country, that is the institution of slavery. Slavery doesn't actually appear anywhere in the Constitution, but they cite the Three-Fifths Compromise and say, you see, our original founding documents only considered black people to be three-fifths of an ordinary person.
That's
a bizarre twist of the text. The Three-Fifths Compromise was designed to reduce the power of the slave states, and it was at a time when most Americans actually didn't have the right to vote. The right to vote is not guaranteed by the original text of the Constitution. The franchise was gradually extended, first by the states, then at the federal level. But there is this misreading of history, and it's designed to make people feel like racism is the explanation for everything that is objectionable that we see today, whether racial inequality or crime in the inner city and so forth. It's all the fault of our founding documents, and it's the fault of the social and cultural systems that nurtured each of us. And so we are supposedly unconscious racists in our conduct with one another, and we need to hire these expensive diversity consultants to come in and sort us out and indoctrinate our children and so forth.
I guess the weirdest thing about all of this, Joel, because it sounds like I'm talking about a foreign country here, is that this caught on so it was embraced so heavily by so many school districts and school boards. It is as if it almost happened overnight. How is it possible that something that flies in the face not only of our, you know, the nation's real history, but in the face of logic and reason? Again, the Three-Fifths Compromise can be easily explained, and you did a very nice thumbnail sketch of it. But if you look at the reality of it, what they say is a lie. And this presentation fails to appreciate the fact that when our nation was established, there was a lot of slavery in the world. There's still a lot of slavery in the world. We didn't have a monopoly on it, but the documents that they hate were the foundation for the freedom that ultimately came about as a consequence of a lot of people dying to free the slaves.
Right. And look, we've been through a lot as a country. We've been through the Civil War, and we've been through the Civil Rights Movement, and there is no systemic racism left in America. If those were systems, if slavery and Jim Crow were systems that didn't affect the whole country, by the way, they affected portions of the country, but if those were systems that enforced racism, they're no longer in place. And, in fact, we have been teaching kids about what they call anti-racism for quite some time. I mean, I'm 44 years old. When I went through the school system, we learned about Martin Luther King Jr.
Content of character.
I read the autobiography of Malcolm X in high school. It was on display during Black History Month at my high school's library, along with other books that were of interest. And this is something that we've already had a generation or two to work through our system. We're not raising kids to be racist such that we need to radicalize our curriculum. But the moral panic that set in last summer with the Black Lives Matter riots, which were driven a lot by politics and the presidential election, that created this intense, urgent demand for solutions in the curriculum to the supposed racial crisis in America. And so right up there were these racial consultants who'd been slowly working their way into the curriculum, into school boards, into the system. They were there ready with materials and histories and texts and so forth. And that's why you see this. There's also a sudden awareness of it, right? I mean, some of this has been going on for a few years already, but parents are suddenly noticing it because it has erupted in destruction all around us. And the events of 2020 really triggered a lot of this.
Absolutely. Well, and you pointed it out, there is no system-based racism because it would be absolutely declared unconstitutional. We got Brown versus Board of Education among 9 gajillion other cases. No Jim Crow law exists. Those would be race-specific applications. We don't have that in the law anymore. So, you know it, I know it, and I know the folks over at BlackLivesMatter.com know this as well. So, Joel, what's the real point in this? They're not using this as a vehicle to get rid of a system that is racist. What they're trying to do is what? I believe it is to completely eviscerate the United States of America as a unified country. It's one more area of division that these Marxists are using to drive a wedge between the American people who used to stand under the banner of freedom. We don't have something to unify us anymore. We don't have a country anymore, Joel.
Right. If you take apart the flag, you're taking apart that which brings us together. And there are things that bring us together, but they're increasingly being attacked. I mean, Tom Brady at the White House yesterday taking a couple of digs at President Trump, totally unnecessary, right?
Right.
And he was President Trump's friend. It's just the latest thing for football fans. We can't watch football anymore. I'm a baseball fan. I love the Chicago Cubs. I stopped watching baseball on opening day this year because of the All-Star game being moved over a completely ridiculous propaganda
yes.
pretext from Atlanta to Denver. Denver, you know, with more restrictive voting laws in some ways than the Georgia law. So I've checked out of those sports. I still watch boxing because there's, you know, you might have a little bit of cheating in boxing. You know, boxing has a little bit of a sordid history, but there's a lot less garbage in boxing. You know, you gotta stand up in the ring against another person. It doesn't matter what color skin you have and all that stuff like that. It's just about lasting through the fight. So, you know, boxing, golf, any sport relying on individual effort is going to be a lot less subject to this sort of thing. But you know, I've checked out of my favorite sports. I know the NBA Finals ended last night. I don't really care.
But their ratings were down like 50% or something crazy. Apparently nobody watched the game, or very few people.
Yeah, the fan base is no longer interested in being lectured to. But they're destroying the things we have in common.
Right.
One by one, they're going through it, and they're destroying the things we have in common as a nation.
It was that is exactly the point I made in the past. You know, when this whole... You know, kneeling during the national anthem thing kicked in. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Please, please stay the hell out of politics. It's like a lot of businesses will embrace this leftist theory. And, you know, Colin Kaepernick, the representative for Nike, well, as we find out, Nike really doesn't care about the United States. They're more interested in 1.4 billion Chinese and cozying up to them because it's going to improve their margins. Kaepernick was a very divisive figure, and a corporation adopted it. But for the idea that Major League Baseball, the NFL, that basketball would adopt these very divisive tactics, they know they're going to drive some of their fan base away. It is bad for them, but it ultimately fulfills the division part. It seems to me they're almost complicit in the division. They have taken the fun out of something that should have been non-political.
Yeah, the fact that this is happening all around us is a sign that's deeply worrying.
Yeah.
And it shows that we need resources to go into restoring America's faith in the country. We need curricula that teach our kids to be proud of the country, proud of the journey it's taken. You know, I was in Ohio a couple weeks ago, actually. I was up in Cleveland on the other end of the state, but I took my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And my daughter's actually biracial, so... You know, we don't put labels on these things in our family, but it was really interesting to go through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and see how this country's racial history can be told in a completely different way. You know, there was segregation in the South at the time rock and roll was being developed largely in the South.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of influences that come from the black community,
absolutely.
Like gospel, like blues. But it also had influences that came from predominantly white music, like country and western. And when you talk about the history of rock and roll, you see that these two things start to intertwine. And there are other influences like Zydeco, you know, in the Cajun region of the country. I mean, these influences that were born often on opposite sides of the color line came together to create this uniquely American art form called rock and roll. And, yeah, Elvis might have borrowed some music from black musicians, but then black musicians got inspired by Elvis. And so it was this give and take. And it produced something beautiful, something that changed the world. And if you teach a kid the country's racial history through that prism, where it comes out into something positive, it's a completely different way of telling the same story, right? The same story of disadvantage and discrimination and suffering. But it's got this redemptive end, which is actually the truth, because I do think America's story is redemptive. It does affirm the founding principles, as Martin Luther King and Frederick Douglass said. You know, they didn't like the way the system was that they were born into, but they said that the principles of the Declaration would be the country's salvation. And you see that in rock and roll. And I was just amazed. I was able to talk to my daughter about race in this museum.
Yep.
and do so in a way that was positive, where she didn't leave feeling, oh my gosh, we've got this moral burden, and which side of myself do I apologize to? You know, does the white side apologize to the black? I mean, how do I even work that out in my own identity? Instead of which, you have a kid who leaves the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame feeling uplifted by the music and by what this country's capable of doing. That's
well,
how
Joel,
we ought to be teaching things.
Joel Pollack, the Breitbart Senior Editor at Large, that undermines their goal, though. You found a reason to, or an ability to explain our nation's racial history, have a positive spin on it while, you know, pointing out the downsides of the racist past and the divisive past. But you see, that's not what they want. They want us to feel bad, and they don't want us unified, and they want us to make us feel miserable. That's the goal of the left. Joel, until we get to talk next time, I'm recommending, as I always do, my listeners bookmark Breitbart. I rely on it every day. I appreciate the reporting that you and your cohorts over at Breitbart do every day. Thanks for the truth. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you, sir.
It is 8:44 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Quick word for foreign exchange. Had another great foreign exchange experience just a week or so ago. My wife's car got fixed. A lot of work. You know, struts and pulleys on the engine with the belt that were making a squeaking noise. They've been worn out, I guess, the bearings or something. I don't know. Hers is a mid-engine car, so you really can't actually see anything. The foreign exchange guys know. They understand that they got data access to all manufacturers' import car data, you know, the programming and everything, software updates. So they had a big job on their hands, had the oil changed, the pulleys replaced, and the belt replaced, and the struts replaced, and the injectors cleaned out. If I had done that at a